Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Rolling Freedom Fiends, baby.
So much tyranny.
So much tyranny.
Nima Vedati.
Yeah, so much tyranny. But hey, there's a lot of freedom, too. I've been reading Ayn Rand lately, not The Fountainhead. Oh, Atlas Shrugged, yeah.
In fiction, there's a whole lot of freedom.
Well, no, there's not a whole lot of freedom there. But, you know, I know it's fiction, but it sort of harkens back to a time when, you know, socialism was sort of ascendant, when that was sort of the thought, was that society needed more planning, and that was really the idea behind what would make the world better and what would make humanity worth something. And it was thick, you know? I know it's just fiction, but she was writing from a time when I think that was the case. I mean, FDR was president, you know, in that era, and we had the New Deal, and we had all these thoughts that all society needed was more laws and more ways to force men, because men couldn't be reasoned with, and you couldn't trust philosophy or morality to the masses.
You know, that era yielded a really interesting type of person. I think my father is just like the archetypal person from that era. You know, he's born in 21, lived through all that, lived through the Great Depression, has always been conservative Republican, hates what's happening now, says, you know, this is horrible. Back when, you know, when I was younger, we worked on the farm, we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps, we didn't ask for a handout. But at the same time, like, he wrote a letter to the editor of the local paper when some politicians were cutting funding to a local hospital, saying that those politicians should be charged with murder for the people who are going to die from not having that hospital have as many services.
Wow. Yeah, just asking the wrong questions. You know, me and my wife go over this all the time. If you get people asking the wrong questions, you don't have to worry about the answers. And so the mainstream just asks questions about where the force should be directed, what the plan should be, not necessarily should we have a central plan, which is the real question. So yeah, a lot of tyranny today, a lot of tyranny in our age, but we do live in an age where I think there's a lot of freedom, and especially, you know, people in my generation, and I really do think it's a generational thing, you know. When Galileo was around, none of the scientists believed that the sun was at the center of the solar system. They thought that that was a ridiculous idea and just nonsense. And it didn't really become a mainstream thought until, you know, after all the old guard had died.
That's a good analogy, and people were killed for thinking otherwise. And I'm worried now. I mean, this is, I told you before the cast that I was kind of bummed out because there's so much tyranny. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the news this week and it's just mind-blowing. It's like the Senate is railroading through this bill, you know, and it's attached. It's what they always do. They always put the really heinous part as, you know, one paragraph in the middle of 800 pages.
Right. Well, it's the defense authorizations bill that they do every year. And they usually do put horrible things in it. But it's one of those things to where, you know, politically, if you vote against it, it's basically voting against all the funding for the troops. And then you get called out on you don't support the troops and you don't support America and you're a pinko commie freedom fiend.
Yeah. And basically this bill, you know, which is going to get railroaded through, and there's all this tough talk. It's basically what it is saying that the military's power to intern enemy combatants, or anyone they think might be an enemy combatant, now covers a battlefield that is the entire earth, not just wherever they're fighting. So basically, now if you listen to Freedom Fiends or vote for Ron Paul or send letters to the editor of your local newspaper saying, I don't like all these government controls, they could pick you up and put you in Guantanamo. You know, I mean, I'm thinking like every episode we do could be our last before you and I are in opposite ends of Guantanamo.
Yeah, I laugh because it's ridiculous, but I mean, it's scary too. I was listening to Scott Horton interview somebody from the ACLU who was railing against this thing in the Senate.
They get it right once in a while, the ACLU.
They do, but Scott brought up a great point that, you know, they've been construing things as material support for any terrorist, and the ACLU helped Anwar al-Awlaki, the American citizen who was droned in Yemen. His dad was suing the government, saying, you know, you don't have the right to assassinate American citizens without a trial, and the ACLU had taken on that case. Theoretically, under the way it would be written in the new defense authorization, the ACLU could be thrown in Guantanamo. The lawyers could be thrown in Guantanamo or detained for providing material support, supposedly.
Or if you make a donation to Freedom Fiends. I would like to encourage everyone to make donations to Freedom Fiends. We got another donation this week, $20 from Lane in Jackson, Wyoming. Thank you, Lane. Lane wrote me and said, you were whining so much the other week about needing money for the cast. Which is funny because we don't really need money, but we need money to keep the cast going together. It's not like we're either of us are starving, but we got to pay for hosting. We got to pay for the streaming server. So, you know, if you want to get on this government watch list, go to the PayPal link on the site and click and make a donation of any amount.
Yes.
Or buy our movie, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which, you know, probably possessing it under this bill could probably get you droned. I would encourage you to go buy a copy of Guns and Weed. There's a link on the site, or you can go to gunsandweed.com, or you can go to Amazon and buy gunsandweed.com.
Buy Guns and Weed and the movie.
And give material support to the Freedom Fiends.
So Lane and Jackson, Wyoming, we definitely appreciate that. Do you think he's by any chance a friend of Shepard Humphreys?
I don't know. Jackson's not that big of a town, and I imagine it'd be hard not to live in Jackson and be a friend of Shepard Humphreys.
Right, right.
Shepard inadvertently introduced you and I, actually.
He did. Shepard's a great guy, sort of a founding father of modern liberty in Wyoming, even though he lives in Jackson.
He's sort of the opposite of Senator Joe Lieberman, who recently said that Google's blogger site, you know, it's a site where you can make a blog for free and have Google host it.
Right, right. Kind of like Blogspot.
Yeah, he said Google's blogger needs a terrorist button, a button on every blog where you could report terrorists. Now, wow. If they had that button, I would report anything that talks about Joe Lieberman. Or, you know, I would probably anything that talks about the government or most of what the government does. I mean,
anything that supports the state, yeah.
The drug war is a fucking tyranny, and it's terrorism.
I saw Reason did a post where they had, I guess, emailed some questions to Newt Gingrich about the drug war. And he was saying, basically, he thinks that we shouldn't legalize marijuana just for the convenience of a few people who may need it because they're sick. Those few people don't matter in the grand scheme of things. What's more important is helping out the parents to let their kids know that marijuana is not acceptable. And then he talked about Singapore's drug laws and how he literally used the word draconian. He said they're much more draconian in there. I believe we need to be following that
as a good thing. He's saying right. We need more draconian drug laws.
Literally. Yeah, yeah. He used the word draconian, and I was just like shocked. Although he's not necessarily a dummy. I think he's on the wrong side of the fence. But when asked about Ron Paul's policy on drugs, he said, you know, it's internally logically consistent, but it's not my angle. So,
well, the word draconian is an adjective. I'm reading from Wikipedia. Is an adjective meaning great severity that derives from Draco, an Athenian law scribe under whom small offenses had heavy punishments. Draco. Doesn't that mean dragon in Greek? It sounds like a word.
Maybe. It's also a character in Harry Potter. Don't ask me why I know that.
Is he a good guy?
No, he's a bad guy.
Well, I ask why you know that, but you haven't seen Apocalypse Now. Somebody posted on your Facebook about, Nima needs to see Apocalypse Now. I heard in the last cast he hasn't seen it. I can't believe he hasn't seen it. And I said, yeah, but he's really good at playing Rock Band. And then said something about these damn kids today.
Yeah. Well, okay. So maybe I'll start watching more movies. I've taken your advice. You have this thing where you say for a successful marriage, your advice is to have separate bedrooms. I'm not going to go that far, but I think I'm going to move my workspace into the living room. That way I can
work. Oh, you should never have your workspace in your marital bedroom.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
You got to have, you have a one bedroom apartment.
In my workspace, I have, you know, where I record Freedom Fiends and my turntables and all my music stuff and my desk is all in the corner of my bedroom. So as soon as my wife goes to bed, which is pretty early, I can't be productive. which is a bad.
Well, when you get that bitchin' new laptop, did you get it yet?
That is coming. It's actually slated to arrive on Wednesday, but it's from Amazon, so they're usually a day early. So I've been keeping my eye on the tracking.
Talk about what you had to pay extra and what you think about it.
I had to pay about $70 in sales tax because Amazon has a physical presence in Washington. In most places, when you order from Amazon, it's great. You get tax-free. You get to stick it to the man and say, hey, I'm using this great global marketplace and not having to pay the evil state. But not here in Washington. Unfortunately, I had to pay the government $70 for a tool that's going to help me to talk bad about them.
Yeah. And I don't even see it as sticking it to the man. I see it as not being stuck by the man.
Not being – there you go. Yeah, because it's not aggressive. It's defensive. If you're not paying taxes, you're avoiding. It's self-defense pretty much.
Yeah. You know, and then when you get that, you could – if you need to do something loud late at night while your wife's sleeping, you could go take your dog for a walk, take your laptop and your gun, and go sit in a city park and work on your projects with headphones on in the middle of the night. I don't know if I'd recommend that, but I don't know what your neighbor
is like. Sit in a city park. Park and podcast about how public property is ridiculous.
Yeah, speaking of sticking to the man, I ran across another connection to Amiri Baraka. There was this anarchist affinity group in New York City in the 60s called Up Against the Wall, Motherfuckers. Hmm. They were violent and they were lefty anarchist, but they're named after a poem by Amiri Baraka. It's a line in a poem.
Okay, and guessing the Up Against the Wall, Motherfuckers. Is something cops are saying, not something a citizen.
Well, it's
saying.
Something cops would say to the citizens, right. But this is the citizen saying it back to the man. And interestingly, it was the line that was shouted by Patty Hearst during the bank robbery.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
I don't know who Patty Hearst is, Michael.
Ah, man. All the old people are just going to slay you. You don't know who Patty Hearst was. Patty Hearst is the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst.
Oh, okay. I know who that is.
Who, you know, runs the media. And now she's the heir to, you know, the newspaper stuff. She was kidnapped by a lefty extremist group in the 60s. And basically ended up with Stockholm Syndrome and became one of them and was robbing banks with them to fund the cause willingly.
Huh. Oh, wow. No, that's a great story.
Her sentence was commuted by Jimmy Carter. Really? And then later granted a presidential pardon by Bill Clinton in his last official act before leaving
really?
Office.
Huh.
You don't know about her?
No.
And she's actually now she's an actress, though, too. She's in some movies by John Waters.
Okay. You know who I know who that is. Okay, yeah. So she's good to go because she was a member of the establishment and she was committing violence in the name of leftism.
In the name of, you know, lefty anarchy revolution, you know, the same kind of ran with the same kind of crowd or the same kind of mentality as William Ayers.
Right, right.
And Up Against the Wall, motherfucker. Same thing.
So the establishment doesn't mind left anarchism because it embraces violence so heavily.
I guess they mind it, but they'll commute its sentence later when they're leaving office.
Right. Okay. Because the tactics are the same. The tactics are using force to get what you want.
So speaking of Up Against the Wall, motherfuckers, the name of this episode is Nuremberg Trials for the Drug Warriors.
Okay.
It's a heavy thought.
It's true, and it's a thought we've expressed before, not so succinctly, but yeah. So basically, go ahead and explain why you think that's so relevant.
Well, the Nuremberg trials were after World War II ended, there were world courts prosecuting the architects of the Nazi empire.
Right.
You know, the people that weren't dead and hadn't fled with fake papers to South America were called in, lined up, you know, sentenced to life in prison, sentenced to death, whatever. For being high ups in the Nazi world and for crimes against humanity. And I came up with this idea, and I'm not saying there should be Nuremberg trials for the drug warriors, but I'm saying there likely will be. And, you know, I'll do a Snoopy happy dance when it happens. And it's a pretty bold thing to say because I think there's a lot of cops that would want to put a gun to your head for even saying this.
That's a pretty optimistic statement, too. You think at some point we'll be to a place as a society where the drug war will be over and we'll live in a free enough society to where we'll realize that, hey, those cops that kicked in doors and shot grannies because somebody said there was pot dealing going on in our house, you think those cops will be held to account?
Yeah. I mean, all wars end. And when wars end, a few of the worst are always tried.
Right, right.
And convicted and
but
punished.
But you're assuming that the war will end with the victory for freedom as opposed to some kind of sunshine and rainbows world where there's no drugs.
Yeah.
Although I think a world without drugs, I don't know if it'd be sunshine and rainbows necessarily.
Hey, people can always make jankum even in solitary.
Gross.
So, you know, I came up with this thought independently of Nuremberg trials for the drug warriors and looked on the internet. There's a lot of similar phrasing to that, but it's not in the sense of there will actually be trials or should be. It's in the sense of that the drug enforcers say I was only following orders.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But not a lot about there will actually be people facing trials after the drug war ends. Couple blog posts, but not much. I think it should be a common and popular thought, and I think it's going to happen.
I hope so. And I hope that whole idea of just following orders as being a cop-out, no pun intended, or just a way of passing the buck to the higher-ups. Hey, yeah, I was just following orders. It really is ridiculous. And I think it's something that's really ingrained in us from the time we're kids. I remember being in school, and, you know, when I was in public school, at least, you could never ask why you were supposed to tuck your shirt in. You were just told to go to ISS in school suspension if you didn't tuck your shirt in. Didn't give a reason. You know, it was because I said so. And I never really accepted that as an answer. I never accepted following orders for the sake of following orders just because somebody tells you to. It's not morally right.
Although I think that the phrase with most of the drug warriors now wouldn't be I was just following orders, because first of all, everyone knows that is a tainted phrase now. I think it would be something like, I was just trying to take care of my family, man.
I'm just doing my job, yeah, yeah.
I'm taking care of my family. That's what it'd be a lot of. Think about Hank, you know, Hank Schrader on Breaking Bad. I mean, that's fiction, but that guy rings true to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's also convinced he's doing the right thing and he's helping people. And he, you know.
He is, and that's why we got to attack the notion that you can use violence against people for their own good. And you're absolved of any kind of wrongdoing just because it's for their own good. People get to choose for themselves what's for their own good. You don't get to choose what's for the own good of somebody else.
And the Nuremberg trials weren't just the soldiers pushing people into the ovens and the showers, although it was some of that. But it was like, you know, military leaders, judges, financiers, Nazi doctors who experimented on prisoners, Eichmann who coordinated the trains and the shipping and et cetera. So it's, you know, really it's like anybody in the drug war would be a possibility for this kind of trials. And, you know, they're still doing these kind of trials in The Hague. I'm reading this breaking news item today, reading from CNN here. Former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo arrived Wednesday in an international criminal court in The Hague to stand trial for his role in his country's post-election violence that killed thousands. There was, let's see, murder, rape, sexual torture, people being disappeared, and arbitrary arrest. Arbitrary arrest, that'd be a good one to try people for, you know, along with all the killings, and there's a lot of killings by the police in the drug war. Section 2, Article 6 of the Nuremberg Charter in 1945 reads, "The following acts, or any of them, are crimes coming within the jurisdiction of the tribunal for which there shall be individual responsibility." This is like a world court, like, you know, you could be tried in The Hague on this stuff
right
now still because of this precedent. Section C, crimes against humanity, namely murder, extermination, enslavement, deportation, and other inhumane acts committed against any civilian population before or during the war, or persecutions of political, radical, or religious grounds in execution of or in connection with any crime within the jurisdiction of the tribunal, whether or not in violation of domestic law for the country where perpetrated.
And that's the key phrase, whether or not in violation of domestic law, because it demolishes that argument of I was just following orders, or hey, it's the law.
It's the law.
It's the law.
And, you know, as we know, all tyrants change the law to make tyranny legal, you know, from Pol Pot to Hitler to Stalin.
To FDR. I mean, why should we be absolved of that just because we're American? And maybe not we. Why should American tyrants be absolved of responsibility? And that's one thing I find interesting about the Nuremberg trials, because correct me if I'm wrong, but to my understanding, it was specifically for the only people tried at it were the Nazis, right? The National Socialists.
Yeah.
Whereas FDR confiscated gold. He stole all the gold from the whole population. He threw all the Japanese people on the West Coast into internment camps.
You know, I think that a lot of the reason that this, and I think that the things that are happening now where, like, this thing is getting railroaded through the law, you know, this amendment in this military funding bill to where anybody can be thrown in prison or droned or killed or whatever for with no trial, any American citizen now. I think those people would be up for this kind of Nuremberg trial one day,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
The people that voted yes on it.
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. And a few people voted against that and shouted out against it. You know, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Justin Amash, that's a guy I'm liking a lot. He's kind of a junior Ron Paul who's coming up. You know about
him?
No,
I don't. I mean, they haven't passed the...
Okay. No, but it's going to get passed. It was supposed to get signed today, but I think it's put off till Friday.
Well, I know the whole bill is going to get passed, but you think it'll pass with this part in
Oh,
it?
Yeah. This is... There's very little being said about this, except by a couple people. Mm. You know, of course, Denis Kucinich is against
it. Well, you know, I heard talk that, you know, there's obviously a nice set of legal challenges to this, to where if it did make it to the Supreme Court, assuming that the Supreme Court follows the Constitution, which I never, ever, ever assume that.
They won't.
But there are a number of great constitutional arguments against this, such as habeas corpus and other legal restrictions, such as posse comitatus. But, the thing is, even if those arguments become successful, they don't get decided until after an American citizen has been detained and after he's been sitting in jail rotting for months or years.
Yeah, you know, I'm not saying, gee, let's hope this happens and make it happen. You know, that'd be foolhardy for me to say or even think. I'm not looking in my day planner. I'm looking in my crystal ball. I think there are going to be Nuremberg-style trials for the drug warriors. Everything from the drug czar, the attorney general, down to the cop on the corner busting someone for a dime bag.
I hope there's Nuremberg trials one day for governments in general. For not just domestic wars like the war on drugs, but for international wars like the war on terrorism. And not just domestic wars, specifically the war on drugs, but all the regulations, all the other things, all the other silly victimless crimes that people get thrown in jail for. I think it's all nonsense, and people need to be brought to account. And I hope one day we have a free society where we can say, okay, now we have a free society, and to show how serious we are, we're going to hold you accountable for the crimes you've committed against us.
I mean, really, it's like, you know, they're passing something this week, it's very likely to pass as is, that would allow the military to sweep up U.S. citizens from their house and put them in Guantanamo-type detention, you know, where they can't see a lawyer, they can't talk to the outside world, their families barely know where they are, etc.
Disgusting.
For anything,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The military can
Well, that's
do that,
the thing, because it's national security. They don't have to have a valid reason. Or at least they don't have to give a valid reason to a judge, or they certainly won't give it to the media. They never do.
Well, I hope everyone listening is downloading and saving all the Freedom Fiends episodes, because there may come a time when there aren't any more.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's just one of us.
Ugh. Who do you think would get droned first, you or me, Michael?
Probably me, because I live in a house and you live in an apartment, and there'd be less collateral damage droning me. And, you know, I'm always here.
Right, right. Well, I live in a low-income apartment, so they might want to just, you know, wipe out the whole block.
Just wait.
They don't care.
Wasn't there a place in Florida where some judge issued a search warrant for an entire project?
I don't know. Was there?
There was.
I could definitely
was,
see
yeah.
that. Oh, and that's yeah. also completely ridiculous.
You know, for like a housing project that had like 300 units in it, he issued a search warrant for the whole place.
Wow. So the cops could just kick in any door that they want to.
Well, the cops did. The cops went door to door and searched every apartment. I think the ACLU got involved, but I don't – there's so much tyranny I can't follow
up
on everything.
And I'm assuming this was this was promoted by the drug war. This was we got to find the crack dealers.
Yeah, it was about drugs. You know, I've actually been to Nuremberg. I did a showing of the DIY or Die movie there and had a good time.
Cool. What's it like? It's in where's it at?
Germany. It's a really old, beautiful city with lots of old, beautiful things, like a lot of Germany. But, you know, a lot of Germany, There's a lot of old, beautiful things, but there's still, there's a lot of places where, like, the damage of World War II still exists. Like, there are still,
Do they keep it there as sort of a preserve to show the destruction? Kind of like in Hiroshima, they have, I think, a building that they've left.
Yeah, and they also have, like, scrubbed Nazism, like, from history. Like, a lot of people there are like, oh, nothing happened between 39 and 45. You know, like, there's actually a joke on Family Guy where Brian the dog is and Stewie the baby are taking a bus tour, you know, a tourist walking, you know, like, look, on your left is tour of Germany. And he's looking through the guidebook, and he's like, hey, there's nothing in this guidebook between 1938 and 1945. And the tour guide's like, nothing happened. Nothing happened. We were on vacation. And it's literally like swastikas are illegal there, and there's a lot of statues where you can see the swastika's been chiseled off of it. Like, there's a lot of public statues that have a chunk on the front of them that something's been chiseled off of. And the song of the Nazi party, Deutschland über alles, is illegal to whistle or hum or use anywhere. Huh.
Now that, Deutschland über alles, yeah.
Like, you could go to jail for whistling that
in
public.
Well, it does strike me as ridiculous that they would try to sort of wipe it from the history books. I mean, I think tyranny should be talked about. Tyranny should be explained so that it doesn't happen again, so that we can see and draw parallels. I mean, like you say before, people throw it all around. Oh, whenever they don't like somebody, they're Hitler. They're the next Hitler. They're the Nazi party. But you can find a lot of parallels, and not just between, you know, modern government and the Nazi party, but between modern government and Stalinism or Leninism or Maoism. There's lots of parallels in government control. And to say that, oh, because we're nice white Americans, we're allowed to do this kind of government control, or we're doing it because we have people's best interests at heart.
Well, you know the saying, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the biggest problems, or the biggest educational deficiencies I see in modern society is people don't realize what happens when you secede so much sphere, so much of the sphere of life to government control.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So, Nima, you know who said those who ignore the past are condemned to repeat it?
Who originated the phrase? I do not.
Spanish philosopher George Satiana.
Ah.
Although one of the more famous uses of it is Jim Jones.
The rapper?
No. Is that a rapper?
Yeah.
Really? No. Uh-huh. Jim Jones, the leader of the People's Temple. And if you say, who's the People's Temple, I'm just going to hang up.
No, I know Jim Jones. That's the drinking the Kool-Aid and suicide thing. Yeah. I know that.
And we're not speaking of the common phrase of, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, which both left-wingers and right-wingers and libertarians all hurl at each other for people who believe what they're told without checking it out. Explain drinking the Kool-Aid.
Kind of gives Kool-Aid a bad name, huh? Well, he had all these people convinced that mass suicide was the way to go, and that's the way they did it, was they poisoned the Kool-Aid and they drank the Kool-Aid. So it's a euphemism, not a euphemism, but a...
Yeah, it is a euphemism for buying bullshit without checking it out. But actually, a lot of the people who drank the Kool-Aid in the Guyana, Jonestown, People's Temple mass suicide were forced or didn't know what they were doing, or they made kids drink it. And it was a heavy situation. It's basically this guy started a temple in San Francisco, weird Christian sect, and did a lot of outreach for the poor, got a lot of, kind of disadvantaged people who didn't have anything going for them, was a charismatic leader, gave them food, gave them jobs, gave them something to do, then took them all down to Guyana, Jonestown, Guyana, not to be confused with Ghana in Africa. Guyana is in South America on the northern coast, other side of the Caribbean. And they had a mass suicide down there, and basically a lot of the people wanted to leave, and he wouldn't let them and had armed guards. And among the dead was Leo Ryan, who remains the only congressman assassinated in the line of duty as a congressman in the history of the United States.
Right, yeah. I was aware of that little factoid.
Yeah, so, and it was the single, according to Wikipedia, it was the single greatest loss of American civilian life in a non-natural disaster until September 11th, 2001.
Huh. I wasn't aware of that factoid. How many people died?
909 temple members and five other people at the nearby airstrip were shot, and one of them was a congressman.
Wow. Shot by who? The guards?
Yeah, by Jim Jones's followers.
Oh, yikes. And this was in the 80s, right?
1978. Yeah, I was 14.
Do you remember it being in the news?
I didn't pay a lot of attention in the news. I think the Vietnam War, like, I paid a lot of attention then when I was, like, five. And, you know, it kind of horrified me. I stopped watching news for about 40 years. I remember it in passing. You know, I remember the Iranian hostage crisis in passing. But, you know... Did you know that BP, I'm getting ads on Facebook now for Team BP. It's this like rah-rah BP is great site of them like backing the next Olympics. Team BP.
Right. Well, because they're British Petroleum. The next Olympics are London, right? 2012.
Didn't BP like assassinate the Ayatollah though, which led to the hostage crisis at one Olympics?
No, it wasn't the Ayatollah. There was a populist
the
leader.
Shah.
No, not the Shah. There was a populist leader named Mossadegh who was sort of democratically elected. You know, he was who the people wanted to run the state of Iran. He leaned more socialist. And what he did was he nationalized the oil industry. So the CIA, BP, and the British government did not take too kindly to that. And so they went back and reinstalled the Shah, threw Mossadegh out, and basically staged their own coup and put the Shah back in power. And then the Shah was sort of the American-British puppet there and had this thing called SAVAK, which was like the secret police, kind of like the Nazi stormtroopers, who would keep everybody in line and assassinate dissidents and all sorts of horrible things. And when Ron Paul first spoke of blowback, you know, this is one of the things he mentioned, because really that is the reason, or that was sort of the, I don't want to say motivation, but one of the things that led to the Iranian Revolution of 1979, and basically the reason why the people stormed the United States Embassy and took it over was because they didn't want to see any more foreign involvement in their affairs.
Isn't there an embassy storming going on now? Iranian? Yeah, in Iran. The British Embassy is being stormed by protesters in Iran right now.
Oh, really? No, I had not. When did that come out?
Yesterday or this morning.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I woke up late this morning and you called me up and were like, let's podcast now. So I haven't had a chance to check my headlines.
Let's see. Protesters storm British embassy in Tehran, screaming death to England, storm the vast. I mean, it's young people, too. I saw footage of it. It's people that look like you or younger. It looks like you and your brother, like you and Frank.
Me and my cousin, like those pictures I posted when I hung out with my Persian family. Three men with beards.
It's like everyone's kind of like between you and Frank's age and kind of look like you.
Well, I think this is telling. I mean, I'm not reading the story right now, but from what you're telling me, this is a good example of, hey, they don't do these kind of things because they hate freedom. Because I defy you to tell me England's a free country. England is not a free country at all.
This is protests of economic sanctions against Iran's nuclear energy program. And I was thinking the other day, it's like Iran's crazy and they're all nuts, but what country isn't? And it's like...
Well, Iran's government is crazy and they're all nuts. We have to make that distinction again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like saying America's crazy and we're all nuts. No, we're not. Obama's nuts. Lindsey Graham's nuts. Pretty much everyone in Washington, D.C. is nuts.
And it's like, really, like, does Iran have less of a right to nuclear power or even nuclear missiles than, like, Israel?
Well, I guess the thing is, nuclear weapons are such a horrible, awful thing. I don't know if anybody has a right to them, because that's also – that's a positive right, like saying, you know, I have a right to food or I have a right to health care.
Well, put it this way. Do you think Iran is more likely to kill a bunch of people with nukes than Israel?
No, not at all.
Why?
Well, first of all
– and I'm agreeing with you, but why?
Iran is not suicidal. Iranians are normal people. I'm half Iranian. My dad's Iranian. I know a lot of Iranians. They're normal people. They want to own a business or have a job, make money, feed their family, sit down on a Persian rug and
drink
tea.
That's the same the world over,
man.
It's
exactly the same the world over, except for governments. Governments want to control people and things like that. But the thing is that every human being has self-interest. Iran would never nuke Israel or have any kind of conventional attack on Israel because Israel has 200-300 nukes pointed right at Iran. They have submarines in the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, with missiles pointing right at Iran. One nuke from Iran, which if they built nukes, you know, nobody said that they have enough enriched uranium to do this. If they did, it would take them 6 months. They'd have one, maybe two. So really, what are two nukes going to do in the face of 200-300 from Israel and 2,000-3,000 or however many America has? It would literally be national suicide. And say what you want about Iranians, but they're not suicidal. There's no Iranian suicide bombers because Iran's not occupied right now. And the other thing is, people say, oh, well, they hate Israel. They want Israel to be wiped off the face of the map. But look at a frickin' map. Israel is not wide enough to where you could nuke part of Israel and not also kill every Palestinian. If you nuked part of Israel, every single Palestinian whom the Iranians are in favor of Palestinian rights, so why would they destroy every single Palestinian? They have no motivation to kill every single Palestinian.
You know, there's an item in the news right now, a Middle Eastern item that a lot of Americans are going, look how crazy those people are. And it is crazy. It's in Afghanistan, there's a woman who's being forced to marry her rapist and is being charged with adultery because a man raped her because he was married.
Wow. That is ridiculous, but the root of it is government. It's the government forcing people to do something.
I mean, how much more ridiculous is that than a guy being sentenced to 99 years for a half bag of weed?
Exactly.
Did you read about that in Texas?
Right. Yeah, I just pulled it up. And that's a great point, Michael. We sit there and throw darts and throw stones when we've got these giant splinters in our eye of the drug war. And, you know, throwing a guy in jail for 99 years for half.
You still want to move to Texas?
Well, Brownwood, I imagine, is a lot different than Austin. Not that Austin isn't a statist paradise.
I don't know. This guy was driving while brown, which was part of the problem.
Yeah. These days, there's not many places where you can go and be left alone by the government. Texas is not one of them. Where I live's not one of them. But even there in Wyoming, I mean, you have horrible drug warriors. You have people banning spice and a law where cops can hold people down and steal their blood for blood testing.
And, you know, around Cheyenne, outside of the base there, the Air Force base, the military is actually helping cops enforce drunk driving laws.
Yeah, I think I read that on Alex Jones's site on InfoWars. Has the press in Wyoming covered it at all?
Oh, I don't know. I don't pay attention to the news now that you're not on TV doing the news, and the Comedy Star Tribune has gone to a paywall.
It's so funny that people like them and the New York Times think people are going to spend much time paying money to hear lies. I guess maybe there is a large portion of society that wants to have those.
And at least the New York Times has, like, people who can write.
Right, you know? Right.
the lies are well written, and mm-hmm. Here they're not. It's like, really, you think people are going to pay almost as much as they do for the New York Times?
And I guess there is something to be said for the comfort of hearing the mythologies over and over again. Because in the end, I think that's what it boils down to. It's a mythology. It's a mythology that the government is good, and it's going to take care of us from cradle to grave, and we need to be in support of it. It doesn't strike me as much different at all from the mythology of the Middle Ages, of the king being your benefactor, or of the church being your benefactor.
Well, as we've discussed, too, like, kings tended to, in some ways, treat their subjects better because they own them, and politicians don't. You know, they do, but they don't. And politicians tend to put in laws to appease the voters for the 4 years they're in, or the 8 years they're in, and then they're gone, and the citizens have to live with that tyranny and the economic impact of that forever, which is really, like, why Europe's collapsing right now. I mean, this has barely been covered in American news, maybe on, like, Fox Business News, it's been mentioned in passing, but the euro is a couple days away from collapse right now.
Right. Well, like you said, it's a time preference thing, and I think Hans Hermann Hoppe sort of makes this argument that kings, they wanted to pass on their kingdom, obviously, to their heirs. It was a family thing. There was a sense of ownership, and they also ruled for a lifetime, whereas politicians in a modern democracy, they get 4 years or 8 years of being accountable to people, so they pass out all the favors they want. You know, there's a great saying that, you know, an election is just an advanced auction of stolen goods.
Yeah.
And that's really what it becomes, is there's such a short time period. And that's why I think when people say, oh, well, all we need is term limits. Well, no, then you'll just have politicians doing more horrible things because they only have a limited amount of time to do them in.
And we don't want kings. We're not saying let's go back to kings. And, you know,
we're just saying that modern democracy is not the end-all be-all. It's not this great thing that we all need to be murdering people for.
Which, you know, let's look at Canada, which is a a nation that, don't they still have the Queen of England on their money?
Well, they're part of the Commonwealth. So apparently the royal family in England is sort of considered the king and queen, or not, they don't have a king, but the royal family of all the Commonwealth.
But Canada's ostensibly a democracy, if, you know, for what that's worth, in some way, some kind of parliamentary democracy. People have elections there. And this is a good tyranny today. Insert tyranny today here.
And now, the Nima News with Nima Vedati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
They're getting to the point where they're having to steal even more by far than taxes can do. And a lot of it's through the drug war. This is one I saw that blew me away. People were busted in Canada. Their doors were kicked in because they had a really high electric bill and the cops thought they were growing pot. And it turns out that they were making bitcoins and running many servers 24/7.
Right.
And the cops kicked in the door, realized they weren't growing pot, they weren't doing anything illegal, and then sent them a bill for the raid. Sent them a bill for $5,200 Canadian, which is about, you know, give or take the same in US, as an inspection fee. I don't even want to talk about that because I think, like, American cops are going to get the idea. Hey, that's a good idea.
Wow. Whereas in any rational or free society, the people who got their door kicked in would send a bill to the cops and say, hey, pay for my frickin' door. Pay me $5,000 Canadian for the mental anguish you just caused.
I know.
Just
in libpair.
Completely ridiculous. Not even in libpair, just in any rational, non-bizarro world type society. Yeah. I mean, how messed up is that? And, you know, that's the way it generally works, is the government destroys something, then they have to pay for it, so they tax us to pay for it.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
I just got an invoice by email for something that I ordered in July that, like, has been delivered to me and I shipped over to Kofi. Boy, does this company run by the government?
Well, I know when it comes to international shipping, there's...
No. This was shipped to me in America.
Oh, huh.
And then I shipped it over to Kofi. But it's like, this has been off my plate since July, and they're just sending me the invoice.
Wow. I'm guessing it wasn't the post office because they're sending you an invoice, but...
No, it's some company in Illinois. There you go.
It's Illinois. In Illinois. That's the problem.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's a mercantilist or corporatist company.
Yeah. They probably have regulations there that you can't send out invoices for 6 to 5 months
And you have to hire 10 people and pay them a living wage for every package you send.
Yeah. So did you see this thing about Bitcoin mining accidents?
Mining accidents? How do you have an accident? Does your computer blow up? Or?
Well, I know that there was one guy who was running so many computers that while he was asleep, he got heat stroke. But there's a site, Bitcoin Mining Accidents. I can't tell if it's a joke or not. But, you know, there's something I want to talk about. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it, but I found this thread from early 2009, where I was asking on the Free State Project New Hampshire website, why shouldn't drugs other than pot be illegal? We need to protect people from themselves and to protect society.
Yeah, that's a really important thing to look at, because you had a natural progression towards freedom, but you weren't always. I mean, there were steps on the road you had to take.
Well, I was a recovering drug addict, too, right. And I was like, the government needs to protect people from going through what I went through. And I almost wanted to delete this thread, and I could because I started it.
No, it's a great, like, piece of history.
It's a historical document, and I'm going to link it, and people can look at it. And it's like, you can actually see my progression in it. And then, of course, like, there's somebody who came late to the party like 2 years later and didn't read any of the thread and posted, like, at the end, like, calling me a statist and blah, 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 you know, how people do on forums.
Right, but, right.
But it's a good thing because it's like you can actually see my progression in it of how, like, you know, instead of brushing me off, like, people took time and gave me logical answers and convinced me. I've only been doing this for like 3 or 4 years, and even starting to do it 4 years ago, you know, when we got guns, and it's like – really, a lot of the progression happened after I met you, which is coming up on what, 2 years ago?
Well, they didn't attack you, and I think it's really important to realize that you don't win people over on Facebook or on the internet or in forums by attacking them, by making ad hominem arguments, or even by using expletives with regard to their argument. You don't say that's a ridiculous argument or that's a retarded argument. No, you explain logically what the fallacies are, and you try to convince people with reason. I think that people, in the end, are rational beings, and they can use that rationality to either try to seek the truth, or they can use it to try to justify what they do. So I think as long as people have a good heart and are trying to seek the truth, then they're open to rational or logical arguments.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what was it that was your epiphany? What was it that made you go, huh, okay, yeah, you're right. It's a matter of freedom, not a matter of the government protecting us.
It was a combination of economic, personal, and moral. You know, the economic being, this thing isn't going to stop anything and it's costing too much money and it's horrible. Mainly the moral, the, you know, that basically, as soon as you explain to anybody that laws are enforced with a gun to the head, you can't see laws
in the same way again.
In the same way, you know, for anything other than murder, rape, theft, fraud, or aggression. And then you could deal later with the, like, well, maybe we don't even need police for that. How would that be dealt with in LibPair? But you can get people to the level of minarchist in like 5 minutes, you know, from statist to minarchist, if they have an open mind, just by explaining to them all laws are enforced by a gun to the head, you know, because if you disobey a law, they will come to your house or they'll throw you to the ground or they will put a gun to your head. If you resist, they will put a gun to your head and take you to jail and throw you in a cage. And, you know, then that's applied to taxes too. And it's like, that is such a small bump of logic to climb over.
Right, and you know, it's not something that stops either, because you can expand on that and you can still apply it, because that's sort of where sometimes the hurdle comes in, is it applying that to real society. And I read something recently that really piqued my interest. It was a blog post on Lou Rockwell's blog by Mike Rozif. He was almost coming at it from sort of a golden rule kind of angle. For instance, if you murder somebody, then you're communicating that that you can be murdered, because you've said, well, I treat people that way, so I accept that they can treat me this way. Or theft. If you steal from people, then society realizes, oh, well, it's okay to steal from you, because that's the way you roll.
Yeah. I've been working on Blag, too. We've been emailing back and forth, the guy from the Dwarves.
Oh, yeah? How's that coming along?
He's going to be a screaming libertarian soon. He wrote me the other day, he's still on tour in England with the Dwarves, and he said, I'm in the UK where it's cold, the food sucks, and there are no addresses on the houses. And I replied, I know, I've been there. When you get back, remind me to explain to you how all that is the direct result of them being pussies who let the government take their guns away. And then I said, can't wait till you get to Germany, where even punk rock squats have signs in the bathroom insisting that men sit down when they pee.
Do they really?
We've talked about that.
Yeah, we have.
It's not an uncommon sign in Europe, especially in Germany, of like, they want you to sit down when you pee because they don't want pee splashing on the rim of the toilet or whatever. And I'm like, I'm a fucking man. I stand up when I pee, you know? And it's just so, I love Europe and I love a lot about it. And I love a lot about it more than America in a lot of ways, like the, you know, open sexual mores, etc. But I hate the socialism of it. And I don't see why, there's no reason that has to go hand in hand with like liberal thought on sex or drugs or whatever.
Right.
And just the thought of almost a mandate of you have to sit down when you pee, it's like just giving up the most basic part of being a man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're regulating the way you expel your bodily functions.
I heard a really good name for the laws of the land recently, you know, the laws that aren't natural law, that are nanny laws. It's a Christian name for them, and it's the man's 10,000 commandments. Right.
Whereas obviously God has 10.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, really the world has one, which is do not initiate aggression. There's three, really. They say that the two are do not initiate aggression and keep your word. Those are really the only two laws you need to live by. And I wrote a whole book on that. It's User's Manual for the Human Experience. And I will link, I now have the audiobook up free on my website, michaelwdean.com, and I will link that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the third rule is, my rule that I add is do not accept aggression, which, you know, you got to pick your battles, but overall I say do not initiate or accept aggression. Sounds a little less pussy than just do not initiate aggression, which sounds kind of curl up in a ball pacifist to me sometimes.
Well, so basically you're saying fraud and aggression, but I could see the argument for fraud being a form of aggression.
Well, I think it is, but I think the keep your word part is important because, I mean, there's little things people do every day where they don't keep their word, where it would barely, there's no way you could really call it aggression. Like, you know, someone who's habitually late.
Right.
It's not really aggressing, but it's just so annoying that people just shouldn't deal with people who are like that.
Right. But then again, that goes back to the golden rule fix. If you never keep your word, are always late, then people either don't want to deal with you or they won't treat you with the same kind of respect that they should expect from you. You know, if you're always late and you're always lying and never keeping your word, then why should they ever keep their word to you?
I know, but a lot of people stay in relationships with people that either don't keep their word habitually or aggress verbally or physically habitually. And, you know, my book is about applying libertarian principles to getting out of those relationships and recovery from drugs and alcohol, right, just recovery from toxic people. You know, it's kind of interesting. Stefan Molyneux does a lot of that too, of like, you know, get away from people like that, even if they're your family. I wrote my book before I ever heard of him, and it's kind of intriguing for me to see that he covers a lot of the same stuff of, you know, FOO being family of origin.
Right.
Of like,
right.
Most people can't comprehend the idea of, you know, it's like family is family no matter what, no matter how horrible they are, you stick with them, and I don't buy it.
Right, right. Well, I think family is important and you stick by them, but that doesn't mean you enable them to do wrong things or you let them walk over you. I think it is just as fair to disassociate from a family member if they're treating you badly. Yeah. I do think that you should love your family and be a part of your family, but maybe that's my bias because I haven't had any family that was really, you know, overbearing. I mean, I guess I had some stepdads, but we got away from them. You know, my mom divorced them and...
You've had really good family experiences, and
I have had really bad family experiences too. You know, when I was growing up,
but they weren't blood family.
Exactly, they weren't blood family, and the way we solved that was, you know, my mom left the bum. That was the way we solved
right,
it. So
right, I've never been like physically abused by blood family, but I have blood family members who are not good for me, and I contact them as little as possible. And they're also just heinous statists, all of them, to the point where, like, you know, they think I'm insane. And they're really, most of them are really, really anti-gun to the point they think I'm insane. And basically, a lot of it is, you know, they're 60, I'm 47, and they still treat me like I'm 6. And I just can't deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, they still try to tell me how to run my life when, like, they're all divorced and broke. And I'm loving life and doing great. And they think they can tell me what to do. So... anyway.
It's like that Eminem line, you fucking do-gooders. Too bad you couldn't do good at marriage.
That's good. I wonder if people can hear these cats wheezing in the background. Charlie, there's like 3 cats in this room. They're all asleep. They're in here because I'm in here. And Charlie's snoring loudly, like...
Cats. Funny. You want to go ahead and break? Cats. I need to grab a beer.
Yep.
All right.
Word.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedotti from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 3 strengths and 8 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com for a free starter kit, a $39.95 value, with the purchase of 40 cartomizers or more by using coupon code FREEDOMFIEND. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now. Freedom Fiends. anti-war, pro-gun. New show on the Micro Effect Radio Network, Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi's fun and feisty weekly chat about constitutional, libertarian, minarchist, and anarchist issues, abuse of authority by police, the war on drugs, the war on guns, self-defense, states' rights, natural rights, Austrian economics, DIY art, low-budget filmmaking, digital recording, activism, rock and roll, and more. Freedom Fiends, Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Learn more about The Micro Effect at themicroeffect.com. Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Rolling. So what you got there for me, Nima Vadadi?
Well, this was a story I had from last week, but I still think it was kind of relevant. There was a TSA agent who was fired for making comments that were sort of racist, basically about how he hated Muslims and how, you know, it was a horrible religion, and also how he hated Obama and lots of negative comments he made about the president and Eric Holder. And I was just thinking, why do you work for the TSA then, you dumb hypocrite?
Where did he make these statements?
On Facebook. On his Facebook. It wasn't while he was on the clock. And so then in the comments, the commenters were sort of taking a lot of offense to this, saying things like, you know, what happened to freedom of speech in this country? And basically that, you know, people say and do a lot of things that I don't like, but I ignore them. And this is just
what happened
PC
to freedom
crap.
Of speech? What happened to freedom of speech when you can't work for the sexual molestation
right.
people and say what you want on your Facebook? I think the bigger issue here is the existence of the TSA than somebody could get fired for what they put on their Facebook. I think in LibPair, if things were private, I think you could get fired for what you put on your Facebook.
Well, I think you can anyway. I mean, I think if, you know, and maybe this is sort of where there's almost a hint of a paradox here, is because, you know, if you work for Walmart or a media company and you say something really offensive on your own time that people find out about, then by all means, that business has the full right to fire you because they don't want to associate with you and they're supposed to have freedom of association.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't get fired for either of your media jobs for the movie or the podcast.
Yeah, that is surprising.
I think they just didn't notice.
They either didn't notice or they you know, maybe they didn't care because I'm a trustworthy guy and I'm the kind of guy who has integrity. And when I work for somebody, I'm going to do what they're paying me to do, which is in the end why I quit media, because I was sick of doing what they paid me to do and I didn't want to do it anymore. But I wasn't going to go on air and just rant and, you know, disrespect them. So in the end, I had to resign. But I thought it was really important in this TSA thing to say that, you know, freedom of speech, it's not a positive right. It's not a freedom to say whatever you want and still keep your job.
It only affects the government, actually.
Well, it's Congress shall make no law. It's basically that you shouldn't be thrown in jail for saying something. It's not that you have a right to keep your job at the TSA.
Yeah, a lot of people really misunderstand what the legal configuration, the legal concept, freedom of speech is. Like, I see it a lot where, you know, say YouTube will delete an offensive comment and then the person will come back and say, YouTube's horrible. They don't respect freedom of speech. And if they're talking about the law, freedom of speech, it doesn't apply to YouTube.
No, not at all. YouTube's
and,
its own company.
YouTube's private property, yeah. Really, when you think about it. It's kind of like, do I have the right to kick someone out of my party because they're being obnoxious or saying something that offends me? Of course I do.
Of course you do. That's also freedom of association. You know.
Yeah, because you can go start your own blog. Now, where freedom of speech would be infringed is with if the government stops you from having a blog on any site that says something they don't like.
Right, right.
Which I think they're working on.
Of course, here's sort of where it gets sticky, and this would be part of my argument for not having a million different federal employees and tons of federal agencies or government agencies, is can the government make a law to infringe your freedom of speech if you work for them?
Probably.
Probably, and it seems like they have in the form of policies and regulations.
I just have a problem with the whole idea of government.
Exactly.
You know, it all comes down to half measures. Like, everyone's like, oh, we need to have the government prevent bullying in schools, and we need to have the government deal with religious icons on public property.
Get rid of the public property, then you won't have to fight about it.
Yeah. You know, the thing of, like, what's taught in schools and what's allowed in schools is never going to be settled.
No.
I mean,
no.
Really, anybody who has a strong opinion should be very adamantly in favor of homeschooling. Whether you're leftist, rightist, libertarian, socialist, communist, gay, lesbian, whatever you are, whatever ism you are, you're not going to be served by having your kids in
public
school.
Right, exactly. And the argument is all, oh, but this is the basis of modern society, is everybody deserves an education and yada, yada, yada. But I think people would get better education if they didn't have to go to public schools. And it's not like schooling would just cease to exist. It's a fallacy to think that just because the government stops doing something, that it'll stop getting done. I mean, you have things like Khan Academy. And also, if you're a homeowner, you pay thousands of dollars a year that mostly go to fund the schools. Your sales tax yeah. goes to fund all these things. And if you had all that money to choose who gets to educate your kids, you'd be better off. And if you didn't have kids, then you're not getting screwed out of money to pay for somebody else's kids.
Yeah, and it's like people with really strong opinions one way or the other. Like, two things I've heard of people being adamant about, you know, let's take one from the left and one from the right, of public schools have to teach this or can't teach this. Like, a lot of lefty people feel the government has to teach gay and lesbian studies and acceptance of gay and lesbians. And there's a lot of right-wing conservatives who feel schools should never teach that. Okay, if you're a lefty, you can homeschool, and all day long you can teach your kids gay and lesbian rights and that view of the world. And if you're a right winger, you can homeschool, and all day long you can teach everything but gay and lesbian equality and joy. And
well, when you have a system where the basic element of the system is we'll steal all of your money and then give you all the same product. How ridiculous is that when nobody's ever going to be happy? It's like I've said before with taxes. 100% of the people in this country are right now having money stolen from them to pay for something they don't agree with. Because there's not one person in this country that agrees with every single thing the government does.
The people that are often the loudest about the government needs to do this or that for me are the ones that pay the least taxes. I hate to say it, but it really looks that way to me.
But they still pay taxes. And like you said, why can't the lefty liberals have their kids educated the way they want? And why can't the religious right have their kids educated the way they want? They should. Each of them should be able to choose that.
A lot of it gets into each side feels that the other side is wrong, and we have to make schools equal in some way to where everything's taught but nothing's taught that they don't like. And it's like, no one's ever going to be happy. You should all just go for homeschooling. You'll be happy.
Exactly. Exactly.
So speaking of too many government employees, what about this list on Wikipedia? Individuals with the power of arrest. Do you want to read this list for the United States? I think they're leaving some off here, but I'm looking at it and I'm just like appalled by how many
different
types. It is a long
list. If you ever come to us and say government is not based on the use of force and throwing people in cages, well, here's a list of all the people that can put a gun to your head and throw you in jail.
They carry guns and can take you to jail.
Some of these are obvious, but just
some of them I never thought of.
Yeah, get a sense of the length. Police officer, state troopers, state police, sheriff, campus police, special police, railroad police, marshals, fire marshals, special agents, CIA, FBI, prison officers, DEA, TSA, immigration officer, military police, Marine Corps NCOs, Interpol, bailiff, alcohol law enforcement, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, DMV, peace officer, which I don't really think exists anymore, and USPIS, that's right, postal inspector special agents. Yes, they can go postal. The post office can throw you in jail and point a gun to your head.
You know, it's kind of funny that guns are explicitly banned in post offices because, and I've checked on this, in the history of the United States Post Office, most of the acts of violence in post offices
have been committed by postal all officials, of them, right?
Have been committed by postal officials or recently fired postal officials, right. Yeah. You know, thus the expression going postal. It's like, why can't the citizens have guns there to protect themselves from the postal agents?
Right. Yeah, that's hilarious. Oh, and, you know, the list needs to be updated if this Senate law gets passed, because then we'll have all these extra military officials we can add to the list.
Well, but that won't really be arrest.
Ah,
that'll be something that's outside of the realm of arrest, because you won't be read Miranda rights. You won't necessarily be able to see a lawyer, and you could be detained indefinitely in violation of the Constitution.
Right, right. Those get more into kidnapping or prisoner of war.
Yeah. You know, there's one that you forgot to read on here was members of the public, citizens arrest.
I think that's an error.
I think it's an error because it doesn't happen very often. Yeah. I mean, usually when that happens, what it is a member of the public detains someone until the cops can get there and arrest them.
Right.
You know, like a shoplifting or rent a cop at a store who's not really a cop, you know?
Right, right. But just try to imagine, what if you tried to citizen arrest
a cop for pepper spraying grandma?
Right, right. Yeah. Or Barack Obama. He would be a terrorist. Well,
actually, there's a citizens brigade in somewhere in Europe who's got an arrest warrant for George Bush for war crimes, and he recently...
I do remember that, yeah.
He canceled some... I forget what country it is, but they're like pressuring the government there, and the government's paying attention to it. And it might be Israel, I forget where, but he recently canceled a public appearance in this country.
I thought it was one of the Norwegian countries.
Maybe. Sweden, Switzerland, I don't know. We're not that kind of podcast. We don't care about the facts. We care about the heart.
We strike at the root.
Now we care about the facts, but there's just so many facts, we're overwhelmed, man. There's so much tyranny.
Speaking of facts and tyranny, I came across something I found really funny when I was Googling stuff. Well, I was looking for something specific on the CNN website.
That sounds dirty. I was Googling stuff.
I was Googling it. No, it was Herman Cain. There was a link to supposedly a story where Herman Cain had been granted Secret Service protection, which I thought was interesting. And so I tried to follow the link, and it took me to CNN, and I found this creepy CNN memory hole 404 page. It said, not found. Sorry.
That happens a lot on CNN. I don't know
subtitle of it, of the 404 error. 404 error is when you get to a page that's not there at that link anymore. It said, not found. Sorry, but you are looking for something that isn't here. I just thought it was
that's their default.
I know it is. It just sounded kind of creepy and Orwellian to me.
I used to have a 404 page on my website that said I had two different ones. One said it had a picture of like it was the motor from the heater in my house. We'd hired someone to clean it out, and it was just covered with fur. You know,
yeah,
it was like this electric motor, and I said, "Sorry, we're blowing the cat hair out of the servers. Come back at midnight." Was one. And then, you know, there's that one that says, like, you have performed an illegal operation, which is illegal meaning, like, not the law, but computer logic.
Not following
logic.
The programming rules. Yeah.
Right. I took that one and changed it to say, you have performed an illegal or immoral operation. Your hard drive is being overwritten with bad poetry. It scared the hell out of people. It was a really bad thing to have.
But, nice. No, that's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have an interesting one on... Freedom Fiends. Let me check out
an interesting 404.
Yeah, I think I set one up. It may have been wiped out in my update, though. Let's see.
Well, there's no error in the Freedom Fiends podcast.
There's no errors in the Freedom Fiends podcast. I don't have my custom 404 page anymore. So Nixon's enemy list. We're talking about this. I was thinking about this because I was thinking about that site Attack Watch that Obama set up for people to turn in people that say things that he doesn't like. Oh, this is an interesting news item. Obama's truck and teleprompters go missing. They lost them. Somebody stole the truck and then they found them a few hours later, like abandoned with some of the equipment gone.
What if they're like selling them in the hood? Like, you could be president too. All you need is this teleprompter, dog. Get this teleprompter right here.
And I'm like, these are the people that are supposed to be protecting our national security. They can't even protect the the equipment that feeds the words to the puppet.
Right.
You know?
Well, I actually read this statement that there are no contradictions. If you find a contradiction, just look, and one of your premises is wrong. It was actually in the Ayn Rand book I'm reading right now, Atlas Shrugged. And I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting. And so I think here it seems like a contradiction. Yeah, they're so concerned with protecting and protection, but they can't even hold on to their teleprompters. Well, they're not really concerned with protecting anything. They're concerned with power, and that's all they care about. So protection is not their strong suit.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
So Richard Nixon, who was president when I was a little kid, who was, you know, considered by many to be the worst American president ever, and he quit in disgrace because he was about to get arrested or kicked out. But really, he's been caught doing a lot of things that the government does to everyone now, you know. You know, basically spying on citizens and trying to use their information against them and trying to trip them up in something. And, you know, he had a long list of enemies. Some of the names on it really stood out to me because there were a lot of really famous people on his list. The full list includes many notable people and publications, including Jane Fonda, Ted Kennedy, Bill Cosby, Gregory Peck, Gloria Steinem, Joe Namath. You know who Joe Namath is,
the football quarterback with the long hair.
Yeah, Abby Hoffman, John Lennon and Yoko Ono, Liza Minnelli, George Carlin, Bella Abzug, Woody Allen, Paul Newman, Barbara Streisand, Carol Channing, The New York Times, and The Washington Post. Those were on a list that Nixon kept that was called Enemies List. And he sicked the IRS on a lot of these people, like subjecting them to an unusual number of tax audits.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that. I think it's also important that you noted that, you know, this is just something that seems probably normal for, you know, a lot of high power government officials. So nothing really to see here unusual, except that because it's Nixon and he was disgraced, for some reason we get to talk about this.
And it was kept by his, like, right-hand man, John Dean. I used to get teased in grade school after Nixon was kicked out for being named Dean because Nixon's right-hand man was John Dean.
Oh, really? What kind of jokes did they throw at you?
Oh, just, you know, you're like the president. Yeah.
That's a pretty bad one, Michael.
I know.
You're like the president.
I know. Well, now, like, the famous Dean is that, what's the Vermont congressman or senator? He was the head of the Democratic Party.
Oh,
the one who went,
Rah! The one who was screaming and had his little rant.
Yeah, the one that lost the presidential
Howard Dean.
Yeah. Howard Dean. Yeah,
yeah. When I think of Dean, I think of the Dean in Community, the sitcom.
Well, and then, you know, the other burden I carry is my middle initial is W, and I was using that for years before I heard of George W. Bush. But
word.
Did you know that when Clinton left office as a joke for the incoming administration, somebody in Clinton's cabinet or, you know, one of his assistants or something took the W's off the keyboards of all the White House computers?
No, I didn't know that. That's pretty funny, though.
It is pretty funny. Yeah, this Nixon's enemy list. Let's see. It says, Nixon's enemy list is the informal name of what started as a list of President Richard Nixon's major political opponents, compiled by Charles Colson, written by George T. Bell, and sent in memorandum form to John Dean on September 9th, 1971. The list was part of a campaign officially known as Opponents List and Political Enemies Project. The list became public when Dean mentioned it during hearings with the Senate Watergate Committee that a list existed containing the names of those the president did not like. And this is kind of a famous thing about Nixon, like, oh, he had an enemies list. It's been, you know, like back in the day, this is before Saturday Night Live, but the equivalent of it, like the political humor.
Well, see, it's interesting,
like,
because, yeah, back then it was something to laugh at and to ridicule him for, and it was made public. Now we have the Obama administration, who has a list of literal enemies that it can kill, and it's secret, and the media just lets it be that way.
And they want to expand that list, you know, probably with a lot of people that wouldn't be worth killing, but they just want to watch, that they're asking the public to contribute to through this site,
AttackWatch. Right. Well, I'm pretty sure that that's not a government website, though. That is supporters of Barack Obama for re-election. So I think that's a political entity.
Is there a difference, though?
Right. Right. Well, I'm guessing that the funding doesn't necessarily come from the taxpayers, and that would be the main difference there.
Well, there was one. The White House had one last year. There was definitely – there was another site that was like – you were. It was the White House, and it was you were supposed to –
Well, I believe it was with regard to the quote-unquote America Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and it was supposed to dispel the myths around the bailouts and stimulus, basically. And that, it's so funny how that's how they always try to go about these things is we're dispelling the myths and we're trying to get you the facts and keep, you know, the president and the administration from coming under attack.
Attack Watch is run by Obama's reelection campaign.
I see.
But, you know, I mean, you're making a differentiation between that and the government, but it's like he's flying around on Air Force One with government guards campaigning, basically.
Right, which is really ridiculous when you think about it. And I mean, how fair is that, that the sitting president gets to use taxpayer money to travel and to, in essence, get himself reelected? I mean, even local government tyrants, they're legally not allowed to get behind things that they're pushing. They have to have, you know, fact-finding missions or put out information. They can't necessarily take one side or the other. Whereas when you're president, apparently you get to throw all sorts of government money around in your effort to maintain your control over 300 million people.
You know, and the next thing we're going to talk about a little bit is the Motion Picture Production Code, which is an early censorship that in the 20s that lasted for a long time, that was started by the Postmaster General, of all people.
Really? I didn't know that.
Talk about
So it was started by a government agency.
And it was a morality czar. And it was around the same time that the drug war started. And people look at government as something that, yeah, there's something wrong with it, but we need to clean it up and make it work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that includes, like, get back to how it was in the old days. And it's like, you know, the old days was, you know, you could be thrown in prison for reading a communist newspaper, you know, or blackballed and not be able to work. And it can't be cleaned up, man. It's got to be scrapped. And it doesn't need to be scrapped and start over. It just needs to be scrapped and start with something with the free market running.
Exactly. It really does. And, well, it's important you say the free market running it. It doesn't need to be ran. Society doesn't need to be planned or ran or have a central group of the smartest people saying what needs to be done and what doesn't.
You know, a friend of mine today who I like and I've done a lot of music with sent me this link. It was this thing that said, like, Ron Paul is in bed with the 1%. You know, and it was a hit piece written by Salon.com.
Yeah,
you know
I them? Do, unfortunately.
My friend said, what do you think of this? And I said, where do I start? It's kind of like, and this guy's a rock musician, my response to it was kind of like if you sent me a link that said, Pat Robertson says rock and roll is the devil's music. Should I stop playing rock and roll? You know, I'd have the same response.
Right.
Talk about the saving grace of Salon.com.
Well, Glenn Greenwald, he actually, he's a great anti-war writer, and he's not, you know, he's ostensibly from the left, but he's not on Obama's nuts at all. He calls out Obama for all his tyranny, well, at least all his foreign tyranny, and even his domestic tyranny when it comes to trying to silence critics. And he recently wrote, you know, a great scathing review of, you remember that Bob Schaefer interview on, I don't know if it was Meet the Press or CBS, one of CBS's Sunday shows where he had Ron Paul on and basically treated him like an ass, like Ron Paul was just ridiculous. And, you know, Glenn Greenwald took him to task for it, saying, you know, the mainstream media, they're not representing the mainstream here. Ron Paul's views are more common than the view of the media elite, which I find to be true. I also want to attack the idea of Ron Paul somehow being the 1%, because, you know, you get a lot of lefties people saying, yeah, well, you know, Ron Paul's okay on foreign policy or whatever, but he wants to hand over the country to the corporations.
No, he wants to strip the corporations of their government
exactly.
power, too.
And I think that we just need to show people where the root is. The root is the government. The root is using government force and government planning to plan and control the economy. And when people get rich like that, yes, that is immoral. When you take $700 billion from the taxpayers and shower it on Wall Street, yes, that's immoral. But that has nothing in the world to do with the free market. That is in no way the free market or the market system or Austrian economics or anything that Ron Paul stands for. And an excellent example of government control is the root of the problem, and Ron Paul is striking at that root, is, you know, he doesn't take a government pension. You know, there was controversy over Wiener still getting his government pension or whatever from being in the Congress. You know, he basically gets paid a nice salary every year just because he was in the Congress for a few terms. Ron Paul doesn't have that. He's not going to take his government pension when he retires. He gives most of his budget back to the Congress.
It's funny that Wiener got ousted over sexting.
Right,
while married.
Right.
And I'm like, that's by far the least worst thing that Wiener's ever done. I mean, every time Wiener opened his mouth, he held a gun to everybody's head.
Yeah, exactly.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Exactly. But then, yeah, he sexts, and then, oh, that's all over. And this sort of gets back to Hollywood and censorship is what really causes sensationalism in our society seems to be sex.
Which leads to the motion picture code. Why don't you read this introduction to what it was here on Squickipedia?
No problem. Squickipedia, yeah. In 1922, after some risque films and a series of off-screen scandals involving Hollywood stars, the studios enlisted Presbyterian elder Will H. Hayes to rehabilitate Hollywood's image. Hollywood in the 20s was expected to be somewhat corrupt, and many felt the movie industry had always been morally questionable. No change today. But political pressure was building then, with legislatures in 37 states introducing almost 100 movie censorship bills in 1921. Yeah. Hayes was paid the then lavish sum of $100,000 a year. He was the Postmaster General under Warren G. Harding and the former head of the Republican National Committee, and served for 25 years as the president of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America, where he supposedly defended the industry from attacks, recited soothing Nostrum Remedia, and negotiated treaties to cease hostilities.
He was Presbyterian. I was raised Presbyterian, and I can say they are a very square people.
Very square people. Nice anthropological distinction there.
And, you know, Republican, one foot on the floor kind of thing. Do you know what the one foot on the floor is? It was kind of a nickname of one aspect of this movie code, was that when a couple was shown in a romantic scene, one person of the couple always had to have their foot on the floor. They couldn't be both on the bed because then it was too sexy.
I see. So bent over a chair is okay.
So the code was divided into two parts. The first part was a set of general principles, which generally concerned morality. The second was a set of particular applications, which was an exacting list of items which could not be depicted. Some restrictions, such as the ban of homosexuality or the use of specific curse words, never directly mentioned but were assumed to be understood without clear demarcation. The mixing of races was forbidden. It was also stated that the notion of an adults-only policy would be a dubious, ineffective strategy which would be difficult to enforce. However, it did allow mature minds may easily understand and accept without harm subject matter in plots which does younger people positive harm. So basically, this is what led to the MPAA and the rating system of films.
Right. Now, this was an interesting sentence, too, in their code about kids, and sort of shows you the progression of how now kids are a sort of a sacred cow. In their sort of adult-only policy or their policy against, you know, basically trying to make everything clean for everybody, because if it wasn't, it, quote, led to the possibility of a cinematically inspired thought crime.
Thought crime.
So the use of the words literally thought crime was in the code.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a wow. I think like we were saying earlier, one of the things that I notice about films and in modern pop culture, and I think a lot of people notice this, I mean, this was part of what South Park the movie showed, was how violence, especially government violence, is completely okay. It's not considered immoral. It's just fine and dandy. You can murder all the brown people you want. You can show bombings and deaths. But if there's some naughty sex going on, it's scandalized. Oh no, we can't have people committing sensual, consensual.
Yeah, it's very.
Like we were saying earlier.
Prudish, but interestingly, under the code, the Boston Tea Party could not be portrayed, probably because it was anti-government.
Anti-government, right, exactly.
Yeah.
It was anti-government violence. Yep.
But, right. Yeah, it was enforced, you know, largely with fear of losing funding more than law.
Well, and fear of more direct government intervention.
Yeah, like they censored the industry, allegedly. It was the industry to censor itself to avoid government censorship, but the government had its hands in it. You know, it was a government agent doing it.
And not only that, but, I mean, the government was the influence. Like I said, 37 state legislatures were going to do things where they were banning certain movies and having all sorts of laws they were writing that would have inhibited Hollywood. So, you know, they were influenced by this. I don't want to say forced, but they were coerced into adopting these kind of rules, which, you know, really limited, I think, in a lot of ways, movies and film can be an educational tool. They can be a way to broaden your horizons and really get at the culture. But they sort of inhibited themselves because they didn't want the government to come in and basically bust their whiskey barrels, so to speak.
And the code was enforced in the motion picture industry from 1930 to 1968. In the late 60s, the studios just stopped paying attention to it and just started violating it and got away with it. Because it was the 60s.
Right. You know. Right. Well, and by then, you know, the Pentagon was already starting to give them funding to show nice, neat government tanks and programs. And so they had their funding from the government in that way and became sort of a partnership.
Yeah. There's political censorship, too. It was like Warner Brothers wanted to make a film about the concentration camps in Nazi Germany during the war, and the production office forbade it.
Really? Yep. Why?
The policy prevented a number of anti-Nazi films from being produced. In 1938, the FBI unearthed and prosecuted a Nazi spy ring, subsequently allowing Warners to produce Confessions of a Nazi Spy. I guess it was just too juicy or too controversial until they let them do it to make the FBI look good.
Ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, anybody who pines for the good old days, this is the good old days.
Yeah, well, and, you know, this is sort of just one example.
Although a lot of people who pine for the good old days know this was the good old days and still want to go back to it, I think.
They want to go back, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I turn on TV, the things that offend me about TV are not the open sexuality. I mean, that's kind of boring to me, especially the unartistic way it's portrayed. I like foreign film portrayals of it better. But, you know, when I channel surf on TV, the thing that offends me is it's either statist or just it sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly. That's far more offensive to me than any depiction of sex could be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know why sex, you know, has gotten sort of the bad reputation it has. I mean, why is sex considered immoral?
Because of religion. Because religion used to be the government, basically.
Yeah, and I know that, and I understand.
You know, they're
that.
Trying to be the government again, too. Like, lately, have you noticed that the Catholic Church, the Pope has been making all the, you know, now that the euro is about to collapse, the Pope is basically offering to step in and manage the world banks and things.
Right, yeah, he's sort of calling for a world fiat currency.
And it's kind of like, well, you know, people trust the church. The church could take care of this.
Catholics trust the Pope. Lutherans or Protestants
not
definitely don't.
Not Presbyterians. Yeah.
Right.
My mother used to tell this joke when I was a kid. This was like as racy as, you know, a Presbyterian would tell a joke. It was guy dies and goes to heaven. St. Peter's giving him the tour. They go by this one room and he hears people yell, bingo. And he's like, oh, those are the Catholics. And he goes by this other room and he hears this clinking of cocktail glasses, and he's like, oh, that's the Presbyterians. And then they go by this other room, and there's this dark curtain drawn over it, and he says, shh, that's the Baptists. They think they're the only ones up here. That was a Virginia Dean joke. I love my mother and I miss her. And is, you know, even though she was a square Presbyterian from Nebraska, I practically live in Nebraska. Why don't you know, I could get in a car and be in Nebraska in 2 hours. So yeah, I've kind of gone back to where my dad's people were from there too. I mean, he grew up in upstate New York, but his people were from there. My parents actually met at a family reunion, which is sounds people hear that. They go, that explains a lot. It's not, they weren't related by blood. They were related by someone else's marriage, but,
Right.
But yeah, that was a Virginia Dean joke.
I did want to bring one other thing up. Obviously, we don't believe that democracy is the end-all be-all or that it even really works. But I did read something really interesting. It was a comment in an article. I can't even remember what the article was from, but I had never thought of this. Basically, this guy says, you know, this reaffirms my belief that we need to add a none-of-the-above option to every ballot.
Actually, doesn't Arizona – there's some state that has that. And really? I don't know who would win if that won.
That would be the great idea, right? I mean, if this election cycle we get stuck with Obama and Romney, you know, most of us just aren't going to vote.
Well, I'm going to vote for Ron Paul, and it's going to be the last time I vote probably. I'm just –
Well, you're going to write him in.
Yeah.
No, but he's, wouldn't it be great if we could all just say none of the above?
Well, the thing is, I'm thinking now it's going to be Newt, which really, if you were a square Republican, Presbyterian or just a Republican who's really a Republican and really believes in what the Republican Party seems to believe in, I think that Newt would be your choice.
I think the media is hyping Newt like they hyped Kane. Like
he's
they
the only smart
Perry.
One, though. I hate everything he does, and I think he's kind of one-worldy.
But he's so evil, and I think it's obvious to see that.
He also cheated on all his wives and won while she was dying of cancer, which really, it's like, what kind of family values message is that? You know,
right. He is carrying so much baggage, and I think that's part of the reason the media is hyping him so much, because if they hype him so much, I think they have two goals here. They either he wins the nomination and obviously loses to Obama, or he keeps Paul from winning Iowa and from winning New Hampshire and keeps Paul from winning.
I don't care about current politics. I want to talk about ridiculousness of politics or funny things about it or cool things about it. None of the above, again, I'm reading from Squickipedia, or against all is a ballot option in some jurisdictions designed to allow the voter to indicate disapproval of all the candidates in a voting system. It is based on the principle that consent requires the ability to withhold consent in an election. Entities that include none of the above on ballots as standard procedure include Greece, the U.S. state of Nevada, the Ukraine, Spain, Colombia, the United States Libertarian Party and Green Party, and the Florida affiliate of the American Patriot Party. Russia had such an option on their ballots until 2006. Bangladesh introduced this option in 2008. I just want to see what happens if that person wins.
What, none of the above?
Yeah, if
yeah, that's interesting. Well, I guess, you know, maybe you just start the election cycle over. Or you know what would be really great is if none of the above wins, then you don't get ruled by somebody.
Yeah, that never happened.
None of the above wins. Hey, you don't have a president. You get to be really free for 4 years.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a pipe dream. But
there's a party in England called the Landless Peasant Party.
Nice.
I like that.
Sort of like our Angry Peasant Films.
Yes, Angry Peasant Films and Angry Peasant Podcasting Company. And the Right Arm of Wyoming CD was on Angry Peasant Music. Or Angry Peasant Records. Yeah. I can't find out what happens if that person wins. I would think that'd be the main thing of the article you'd want to see.
Right. Well, maybe they're assuming that would never happen. That one politician is always going to win.
The South Wales anarchist group has run a campaign urging people to vote nobody. And many other anarchist groups worldwide have promoted similar slogans. Well, I've seen that. Like, nobody will lower your taxes. Nobody will keep his campaign promises. Nobody will make your life better.
No, that's funny. Yeah, I think I've actually seen that as a bumper sticker on Liberty Stickers.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Back to the motion picture code, There's a film that we've both seen that I really recommend, we recommend, called This Film Is Not Yet Rated. It's an independent film. It's about the MPAA ratings board, who are like secret. Their membership is secret. And this guy hired detectives to go try to find who they were.
They're sort of the modern incarnation of the motion picture code. And they hold so much access because, well, I guess it was more true then than it is now. I mean, now we have things like the web, and movie theaters aren't necessarily the one-stop shop or the only gig in town that they used to be. But it's really big access. If you don't get an R rating and you get an NC-17 rating, that makes the whole difference in the audience your movie is going to have.
You know, there was somebody who came up with a technological workaround, which I really liked, and a lot of Hollywood was really upset about it and sued to stop it, and I don't think they are in business anymore. But it was a Christian company that sold a special DVD player with a subscription service to where when you put a DVD in it, you could pick different levels of age viewing or whatever, or family compliance. And you could take a film that was a popular film, and this company had a team of little Christian censor gnome employees who'd watch all the popular movies and mark which scenes they thought were objectionable. And then this special DVD player would download the subscription service template of the time code of what to skip for that DVD, and it would skip it for you. It'd be like, you know, putting your hands over the kid's eyes for you without having to wait, and it would just skip to the next scene.
Yep.
And
yep.
I think that's brilliant, you know. But a lot of filmmakers were like, no, you are ruining my vision. I cannot allow this. I must use the government guns to stop you. And as a filmmaker, I'm like, f*** it, man, you know? I mean, we put our stuff out, Creative Commons. You know, if somebody wanted to re-edit Guns and Weed and do something non-commercial with it, we'd be fine with it.
Oh, totally, because it's their choice. You know, if they want to see just part of the movie, it's their right to do it. And, I mean, the technology, I mean, yeah, it makes it easier. But what were those people doing before? They were probably fast-forwarding it or having the kids cover their eyes.
Well, we even, a year ago, we put out a cuss-free, hip-hop-free cut of it, and it sold, like, 11 copies. But it was selling for $120. But that was a big mistake that we can't repeat, and it wasn't us that we agreed to it, but it's what happened.
I thought it was a bad idea from
the start.
I thought
it was too, but you know, I was like, well, my distributor knows their business, and they didn't, or they, I don't know, I'm not gonna bash them, but
it was a misstep, but there's always
it's already sold, you know, hundreds of copies more than that with the full director's cut, and it's not even out officially for another 9 days.
Yeah. So add the fuel to the fire, add the powder to the bullets, and light up that bowl and go ahead and buy Guns and Weed.
We don't recommend doing anything illegal. So, you know, like it says in the beginning of the podcast and the movie, if this is not legal in your community, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Like a seastead.
Which I'd say is New Hampshire if you're going to be in the States. I don't want people moving to Wyoming anymore. I want everyone to move to New Hampshire.
Why not Wyoming?
I don't know, because I like not having a lot of people around.
You want me to move to Wyoming?
Well, yeah, because you're my best friend. I want you to move back here, and I don't want you to like get arrested and thrown in jail for 99 years for nothing for being brown in Texas, where you want to move.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah, holding while
fair
brown.
Enough, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got anything else here? We got a little more time.
Do we have more time?
Maybe not. If you got something that's burning. If you got a burning desire, you know, they used to do that at AA meetings. Like the speaker would get up and share, and then people would go around the room and raise their hand and talk for a couple minutes about their day or their week or good stuff or bad stuff that was making them want to drink or good stuff that made them not want to drink or whatever. And a lot of times at the end of a meeting, they'd say, you know, when they had like 2 minutes left, they'd say, well, the meeting's over unless anyone has a burning desire, which is basically like, if you didn't get to speak and you have to speak or you're going to drink or you're going to go crazy, you'd get to speak there. So
speak now or forever hold
your peace. Yeah, but it was kind of cool. Like, you know, if someone didn't get to talk. So, Nima, do you have a burning desire?
I have one thing that maybe we could have discussed in the podcast, but we didn't. I did want to talk about the government's growing motive to encircle China and make claims on the South China Sea. And now we're putting a base with 2,500 Marines in Australia to sort of show that we're a resident Pacific power, and we're not going to let those dirty Chinese get away with anything. And this has an angle, too, that basically I read this Justin Raimondo article, who's a great writer for antiwar.com, showing that, once again, San Francisco is the pioneer of this horrible square trend that we're seeing today, and how square and San Franciscan anti-Chinese sentiment is. So if I can read this paragraph. Raimondo writes that reasserting America's role as a quote-unquote Pacific power and vowing to project power and deter threats to peace in the region, President Obama is rattling the saber in China's direction for purely domestic political reasons. The labor unions at the core of his constituency traditionally hate China and all things Chinese. It's a sentiment that dates back to the latter part of the 19th century when labor agitation against the Chinese coolie labor resulted in lynch mobs prowling the streets of San Francisco and the rise of anti-Chinese Working Man's Party. Big labor would love to slam tariffs on Chinese goods. After all, Chinese workers are guilty of the crime of providing Americans with reasonably priced products that everyone wants, so they must be punished. In addition, the neoconservatives, always in the market for a new enemy and the new reason to increase military spending, have jumped on board the anti-Chinese bandwagon.
Yeah. Well, I have some solution. You know, I think that there is something to the idea of China being a threat in a way. I think part of the reason that they're being so open to free trade in their country right now is to build up their military, you know, possibly for self-defense, but possibly to just march in and take over after the UN disarms all the Americans. So really, here's what I think.
You think it's going to be the Red Dawn remake that was never made?
So this Christmas, instead of buying a bunch of Chinese-made toys for your family at Walmart, send that money to the Freedom Fiends. And that's how you can be a good American. Just buy our Guns and Weed movie, buy 8 copies of it, buy it for your friends, your family, hand them out on the street corner. If someone wants to email me, I'll give you a bulk deal on them. I'll give you a few dollars off if you buy a bunch of them and donate to the Freedom Fiends, and you will keep the Chinese from marching in and having sex with your wife.
Well, the disc that the movie's printed on was probably made in China, Michael.
Yeah, so is the computer or the DVD player you're playing it on. But, you know,
exactly.
They've already been printed up, so you're not going to increase China anymore by buying them. There's a whole warehouse full of them somewhere. So go ahead and buy them and make donations to us via PayPal, which is an American company run by a seasteading libertarian billionaire. And you will help keep the Chinese from coming in and fornicating with your wife.
Well, I don't know if I take offense to it, but I think that that thinking of China as the enemy really is getting people to ask the wrong questions and
point their anger pulling in the wrong direction. I'm just trying not to beg for money. I'm trying to make it funny.
I know you are, and I don't begrudge
Lane,
that.
Because Lane from Jackson said I was begging, so he had to send me $20 to shut me up. So, but I'm just joking now. So yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, man. Worms.
All right.
Worms.
Peace.
Peace.
Go, go, freedom fiends. Freedom fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom fiends, saving the universe. Freedom fiends, doing the things that I've seen. Taking the world from the state, fighting the forces of hate. Freedom fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom fiends, kicking the hornet's nest. Freedom fiends, doing the things that I've seen. Keeping the tasers away, you should be free, not a slave. You'll hear the truth today. Yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block. For the fiends on the clock, ain't never gonna stop in the glass. Go blow. Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me, and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell 2 friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.